This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast. So, what's on the docket for today?
I think we need to talk about just how messed up we may potentially be in our supply chain with everything going around ransomware. It's very loose discussion, but you know, there's a lot to cover, and I think we are in a world of hurt.
I think our supply chain is lost. I think we lost that battle, and now we have to look at it from the viewpoint we're starting over. Every quarter, there's a major breach into multiple government agencies by legacy software. And by legacy software, I don't mean something that's old, just vendors that have been there for way too long and probably not have not had to be audited all over again to fall into current day compliance.
Yeah, I think they've really gotten complacent. You know, they get, you know, the quote unquote too big for your britches, as Pappy would always say, and you know, the whole we're too big to fail, and you, whatever analogy you want to use, it they just get to that point where they just don't care anymore, I don't think. And you and I have had offline discussions kind of around this when we do pen testing and stuff like that. We start submitting stuff. These folks are just like, yeah, whatever. You know, until there's enough of a noise or enough of a threat or something like that to, you know, force people to change. You know, case in point, and we're going to talk about this in just a moment, but, you know, CISA orders federal organizations to mitigate Pulse secure VPN bug by Friday. You know, and this is kind of what the whole crux of some of our conversation was, if, you know, when we start reading at what the Hill has posted, multiple agencies breached by hackers using the Pulse secure vulnerability. Are you familiar with this vulnerability? Have you done any reading up on it at all?
I have actually, and it took them about 3 weeks to actually release a notice on it. And it's been going on since August of last year till maybe end of March of this year. So it has been considerable time. It's linked to a couple of UNCs, linked to APT China. It's yet another vector in to our infrastructure, civilian agencies, not military. But where this goes deeper is they have gone into the defense industrial base, and that was the target. Now, going off of this, how many vectors into our infrastructure do we have right now?
I think we're really at a point where everything is to be considered compromised.
Absolutely.
If you take a look back, and this article here mimics it, you know, where the cybersecurity group, once again, FireEye, has put something out between SolarWinds and then Microsoft and Mimikatz on Pulse Secure VPN. Just all of these vectors are keep coming out.
Well, what if I added two more vectors in there? What about the SonicWall email gateways? And what about CodeCove, who does verification for code and testing for developers? They were breached.
That was a very interesting one as well, where a lot of developers are using, you know, Calico to verify that their stack is secure, that it's authentic. You know, and that is another supply chain. You know, if you're able to get in the middle of a code verification, code signing aspect of things, you're screwed.
Let's take it one step further. By all reports, the CodeCove bash loader was weaponized as a Trojan horse.
Yep.
Which goes back to my point. I think our supply chain, it's lost. It almost reminds me of when Apple gave up on the fight against Windows. They declared Windows the victor and decided to refocus, and they came out stronger. Is that something we should be doing?
I think so. I think we need to take a real hard look internally at what in the world is going on. How are these folks getting into these organizations and staying in there for so long? And I mean, I know the answer to it. They have patience, but nobody, the internal IT, the quote unquote blue teamers, are not threat hunting. They're not looking at their logs. They're supposed to. But when you take a look at the industry as a whole, for, you know, we take cybersecurity aspect out of, I mean, that's an invisible shortcoming with trying to find people. But, you know, qualified IT folks, even in your world and where I used to be, you know, you're taking over a company's IT infrastructure and you're just, your head's down in your lap. It's like, why in the world are they doing this? You know, I don't think there is many people who knows what they're doing. And it goes back to what you always keep saying, the whole pizza tech and low barrier to entry. If none of these people are actually monitoring their logs, I mean, when you take these logs and look at, just take your basic firewall logs, and if you're using an external DNS filter, Cisco Umbrella, whatever, if you start taking at least those two and start analyzing those stuff against MITRE or Atomic Red Team, or you're taking in any of that stuff, you're going to start seeing clear issues. Getting alerted on false logins. I can't tell you. I mean, we got another case in today, and I know I'm getting a little sidetracked on this one, but you know, there's a new ransomware out there called QLocker that's going around and finding either Synology or QNAP NAS devices, probably even Buffalo, but they are finding these NAS devices on the internet, going in and 7-zipping all the files and password protecting them. You know, they look like they are doing right around a $600 payout of it, but you know, it's that again, so the low barrier to entry. If somebody was actually monitoring those logs of that, so that NAS device, never mind that you can actually 2FA most of these things, and you can actually get them into Duo or Microsoft Authenticator, and you know, really layer on the security on these things. But you know, a simple audit trail of, is somebody brute forcing their way into this thing? They're not looking at this stuff.
Let's go back to the Pulse Secure 0-day. Who found it?
FireEye.
Okay. Why is FireEye the one finding all this stuff? We've got the NSA. I'm sure every branch of the military has an intelligence component. And the Mondrian Group out of FireEye estimates there are at least 12 families exploiting Pulse Secure vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do we just nuke and pave the whole goddamn thing and start over?
I think we're past that.
This reminds me of that embassy they tried, well, the U.S. tried building in Russia back in the late 70s and early 80s. By the time they got to, I think it was the third or fourth floor, they realized there were so many bugs and listening devices placed by Russia. It's just a matter of time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know FireEye has got a ton of really smart folks. I mean, they're, you know, they're one of the leading cybersecurity firms out there. But, you know, even those group of folks take so long to find some of these things. Why are we looking to FireEye to be the savior?
There are too many systems.
That's what I'm saying. We need to go back to the internal.
There are too many systems that are supposed to be integrated with each other. There are too many places to hide. And the biggest difference, I think, with us and, say, the Russians or the Chinese, their intelligence and their intelligence apparatus is built for the military by the military and their agencies, whereas we go into the private sector for them to build something for us that's available to every and anyone.
And looks like CISA's actually, according to here, has listed two state-backed threat groups.
It's linked to China. China's the APT on this one. They will or try to attribute to via UNC 2630, I think it was.
Yeah, once again, we said Chinese backed likely behind the attack, right?
You know, even though they named Russian SVR last week for SolarWinds, no one actually knows. It's best guess.
It is best guess. Yeah, I don't know if this has been, any of this stuff has been, the compromise, the breach has actually been put to any sort of ATP MITRE attack framework or anything like that.
I think it's still in its infancy.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I think it may be, you know, FireEye has already done that. It just is not public knowledge yet, right?
You know, with the SonicWall flaw, it took them 2 weeks to release the patch and 25 days to make a public disclosure with their email security flaws. So you have SonicWall, you have Pulse Secure, you have CodeCove, all happening within a couple of weeks of each other, being identified. How many more of our systems are compromised? And when I say our systems as a country.
Like I said, I think it goes back to we need to have trust but verify. But I'm even more skeptical of that. I think we are really at a point where we need a nuke and redo.
Absolutely. You know, nuke and pave is my favorite thing.
What do we go with? You know, let's just say hypothetically, you know, we're going to do devil's advocate here. If we want to nuke and replace, what do we put in?
There's nothing like every MSP out there. Build it from the ground up.
So Linksys and Netgear, got it.
No, but seriously, this goes deeper than just, I would say, a nuke and pave. All of our hardware is built in Asia. Quanta, they do Apple, Dell, HP, Lenovo, Cisco, and a few others. They were breached by Revil, and now Revil is requesting $50 million from Apple to pay for the plans, all of the latest MacBooks and what have you. So our supply chain is compromised from the hardware side in Asia. It's been compromised here at the code level. These aren't exploits that they're doing. This is getting into the DNA of code that Russia, China, and whomever else has been able to do.
You know, you're talking about Revil, that brings up a very interesting point. You know, we've kind of gone back and forth on this a couple times, where with our incident response, we're seeing a lot of lull. We're seeing a lot of people not getting hit. But, you know, Revil has been pretty quiet until recently. DarkSide, which I just learned this week, shame on me for knowing this, but, you know, they released their decryptor to Bitdefender in January or February or something like that. You know, their site's still up. You can still go and get whatever you want off of their site, which is weird because normally once they release a decryptor, they're just like, whatever, and they take down their onion page. NetWalker, of course, is gone, which we thought DarkSide was doing. But there's a lot of ransomware pages. And Conti, I forgot about that. Conti is now offline. You know, those are another big player. And it's not uncommon for Conti to go up and down from time to time as they're trying to get stuff. But Conti, with all these other ones going dark, if you will, I'm scared. I think something is getting geared up.
I think we should be scared. I think every time there is a lull in activity, it's the ransomware actors training their people, improving their tactics and techniques, and spreading that knowledge in their community where it makes them all stronger to come after us. Because these are nation state backed. Let's be honest. This is cyber warfare. This isn't hacking. This isn't driven purely by profits. Yes, there's a profit component to it, but this is about getting into the US and causing havoc.
So, you know, the Sonic Wall and, you know, the VPN issues, yeah, you know, those are nation state. But I don't know how much of this ransomware to some degree is actually nation state. You know, nation tolerated? Absolutely. They got the safe harbor that we, you know, the term we use a lot.
It's like the Godfather. I'll do you this favor. I'll give you safe harbor. But one day I'm going to come ask you for a favor.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it pans out to be, I think.
Yeah. And I do think that a lot of them are talking. You know, I do think that they have their own private Discord or Slack or whatever. But I do think that all these folks are communicating with each other.
Speaking of private communication, did you see that the Russian SVR created their own secure drop on the dark web?
No, I didn't see that.
The union address was made public yesterday or today, maybe. And it's meant for the international crowd to report any threats against the Russian Federation.
Oh, fantastic.
They're taking a proactive stance against it.
So it's like, it's not don't ask, don't tell, but please ask and tell us everything.
Pretty much. And you can stay anonymous.
Anonymous, supposedly.
But that's a whole different ball of wax. Going back to Pulse Secure and Sonic Wall, how long before our boys at the FBI decide it's their job to patch this stuff for those affected?
Yeah, that was one thing I meant to bring up is, you know, even though CISA has already given the mandate to have things patched within the next 48 hours, essentially, or just a little over 48 hours, but is the FBI going to step in and start patching stuff?
We'll find out after the warrants are unsealed. Let's talk about the patching guidance from CISA.
Okay.
They've been talking about Pulse Secure. Was it yesterday or Monday?
Monday, I believe.
Why 5 days to patch? Why not three? If you are doing proper asset management, you can probably mitigate this pretty quickly. Now, there are prerequisite patches for certain versions that need to be installed before the mitigation can be installed. And I get that. But again, if you have proper asset management, this is a 2 to 3 day operation.
That's an interesting conversation. So like internal IT, take shadow IT, the outsourced IT out of the equation for a moment. You know, internal IT, yeah, they probably have, you know, backup hardware, backup firewall, backup switches, things of that nature. So if they apply a patch, just things go awry and they can't roll back, then they have a backup they can throw in and leverage. Yeah, you know, we've talked about most of those being overworked and not knowing really what they're doing to some degree.
Do they even work?
Stay on TikTok or Tinder all day. I don't know.
I am so pro TikTok.
You know, it's always funny that I always see these TikTok things come across. I'm like, eh, I can't see that stuff. I can't. You know, if you got an MSP or MSSP or just an outside consultant that's doing this stuff for you, even in a co-managed or 100% offsite. Let's just say, you know, they have SonicWalls at every location and there's a bug in that patch. What's the likelihood of them being able to replace all those or roll those things back in a timely fashion? And that's really where a lot of this stuff comes in. I think that having maybe a phased rollout is more pertinent. You know, it brings up a question, you know, or the whole topic of what is an acceptable patch policy. I mean, I think in most situations, an internal IT firm should be able to get things patched within 5 days, 7 at the latest. You know, maybe if they have to wait till a weekend to reboot stuff because of maybe VPNs can't go down or whatever, you know, you got to have that patch window.
What world do we live in where a VPN can't go down to give adversaries persistent access?
A lot. There's a lot of my co-management that uses Azure.
Oh, no, I get that. But we're talking about government agencies here. So what are we going to do? Just leave it open? Let it continue to be exploited?
Sure.
Because Sally wants to grab that file off the server? Or John, whoever, you know?
Yeah, and I really think that their push to have it done by the end of the day Friday, I mean, let's just be realistic. You know, hackers work heavily over the weekend because that's the downtime of the company, right? So you know, they're trying to mitigate and make sure that these things are patched as quickly as possible. Consequences be damned. You know, I just really hope that these code writers are, you know, doing their due diligence before releasing a patch. But to bring this thing around full circle is, do we even know this code is properly signed?
Not anymore. CodeCove was breached. They got popped the same way that SolarWinds got popped. That's what I said. We have to start over.
Was it an FTP server?
That I do not know.
Yeah, that whole joke is, oh yeah, we got breached by FTP. No, I don't think so.
Listen, I think with the scale of the breaches and the companies that are being breached right now, there is definitely a physical security human component that comes into play here. I don't think this is just coming in over the wire.
Mm-mm. You think a lot of this has a physical aspect to it?
I think so. With how wide they are, I read an article recently that the Chinese government will send someone over here in their youth, let them live their entire life, go to school, get top grades, get clearance, go somewhere. 4 years later, they'll tap them to activate them.
Mm-hmm.
They are playing the long game, whereas what are we doing?
TikToking.
Well, aside from that, that's a necessity. Come on. It's like breathing for some people. But realistically, what are we doing?
We're not doing anything, unfortunately.
We're not even protecting what we have, quite honestly.
Not efficiently, no. You know, there was a good thing that was said, and I'll circle back in a second, but the Middle East and Asian countries are more worried about math and other skills, where typically Americans are worried about the next 30 seconds of fame.
I can see that. You know, we live on this extremely shortened news cycle, and it's about getting that 15 seconds of fame, not even 15 minutes, whereas China, Russia, they have been playing the long game.
Yeah, there was, just reminded me when you saw about Chinese spies, but you know, everybody's like, oh, well, that's not really a thing. But if you go Google it, I forget if, what senator it was not too long ago that was on the National Committee, Security Committee or whatever, that had his girlfriend come to find out she was a Chinese spy.
But go back to, I want to say 2008, 2009, about a dozen Russian operatives were identified and deported to Russia. And they returned as conquering heroes.
Yeah.
And then it happened again, I want to say in 14 or 15, with a single person from Russia or the Federation. So what are we doing?
Exactly. And I mean, I'm sure we are doing the exact same thing in their country.
I don't hear anything about Russian systems getting breached, do you?
Maybe we're a little bit more secretive.
Super secret squirrel. I like it.
No, I'm just kidding. I just think that they do have a better long game. They're more focused.
I think they have a long game.
Mm-hmm. We don't.
No, not at all.
Well, I've said it before. We are a nation of consumption. We're nothing more than that.
So how do we move forward from here?
Just drop an A-bomb on it and walk away.
On where? Our infrastructure or them? Both.
And then I'm out of business. But no, I mean, yeah, I mean, on infrastructure, it's there's got to be a mentality of ripping and replacing. We've got to, you know, I know a lot of people may not like this, but we got to pull the manufacturing out from overseas.
Okay, so let's pull on that thread. We take the manufacturing, we bring it over. What are we going to manufacture with?
We have to start building that infrastructure.
Okay, but where are we getting the raw materials?
We have to start working on all that. I'm sure a lot of the raw materials we can get. We can get silicone. We can get, you know.
Where are we getting it from? Most of the mines in Africa, Australia, across Asia are controlled by Russia and China.
Yeah. I mean, we just have to get the raw materials from there, I would imagine.
So we still buy from them?
Mm-hmm. But at least they don't have a direct line of, you know, our technology. They're not manufacturing it.
So we will create our own inflation, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
Would you rather have inflation that we already have going up in the country, or would you rather potentially just leak all the data out?
I mean, we have lower prices and it's still getting leaked.
Exactly. So, you know, but we're talking about change. So,
but how long do you think this change is going to take? This is something Russia has been dealing with for 25 years, give or take, since the fall of the Soviet Union. China, I think, has taken an even longer approach, 30, 40 years. This is in the making.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be something that'll be completed in our lifetime.
Or would our kids be the lost generation or the sacrificial lamb, so to speak?
I don't know. Maybe.
It's interesting because I don't think that the breaches and the supply chain activity stops at these four or five incidents for this week. I think we're going to keep seeing this over the next few months or a couple of years. And APT activity should only be going up. I'm not seeing any defense for us. When a company's breached, there's nothing that says they have to disclose it. Where do we go?
I mean, they're just getting to that point, right? And, you know, we've had this conversation a lot of times about, you know, who's going to be the mandating force, you know, whether it's CMMC or if it's, you know, the insurance companies or whatever it is. But yeah, there's got to be accountability. There's got to be disclosure. There's got to be something, but a hard stance needs to be made. You know, a line in the sand, if you will, say, okay, no more. We are starting down a different path. You know, if that whole fork in the road type of thing, we need to come to that.
I think we almost need parallel construction. I have set up an entire new group of cyber hunters, killers, whoever, whatever for us, and have them build their own tools, build out their own stuff while we continue to use and mitigate what's out there and just do a hard cutover. And leave the past in the past.
I wonder if the NSA is actually doing any of that. You would like to think so.
I would hope so. I would like to hope they've been doing it for the last 20 years and not going to a publicly traded company to buy their software. I never expected the NSA to have been using Orion.
Yeah.
They should have had something homegrown. With all of their cyber warfare operators, as they like to call themselves, who've come into the managed services space with their specialized tools, you'd think the NSA would have built half of that stuff out.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. I would love to be a fly on the wall in some of these conversations, be like,
Ask China or Russia for the transcripts.
You can't do that because I remember Trump asked that one time and he got blasted all over to Kingdom Kong about that or about the Hillary emails. So,
Well, you just have to say please this time. I think that's the magic word.
Because I don't think I've ever heard Trump say please.
You know, I saw an article a couple of months ago, maybe back in February. Any intelligence-related warrants or DOJ activity is now being done by paper only. They don't even trust their own systems.
That's sad.
That's the world we live in.
It is.
We need to make an about face. I think we need to just rebuild and go from there. But you're also going to get into labor laws. Unions will make it incredibly hard to produce anything here in a cost-effective manner.
Depends on what state you're doing it.
Federal labor laws, OSHA.
You got the federal level to that aspect, and as long as you keep it out of, oh God, we're going to get political, but you keep it out of the Democrat states and more of the Republican-leaning states where a lot of these companies seem to be going, you know, people are fleeing New York, California, going to Texas and Florida.
But it's New Yorkers and Californians going to Texas. So I joked around with one of our peers in our daily Zoom call. It's going to be called New California.
Mm-hmm. They just take out New Mexico and it'd just be one big swoop.
It's like Joe Rogan on his podcast was saying, you know, all these people are leaving New York and California to go to Texas. I hope they don't turn it into what they fled from.
I bet you they are, or they're trying to anyway. But yeah, it just really depends on what state they set up shop in and kind of go from there.
What about your stack? How are you assessing what you're using for your clients on the consulting side as well as the remediation side in terms of the types of breaches coming out there? Because I know how your mind works. Just because your vendors weren't affected doesn't mean you're not going to sit there and expect your guys to be safe.
Exactly. You know, it's, we do pen tests against our vendors that we use, right? So we are constantly testing them. I make sure that we are under a safe harbor with those folks. But it's getting to the point really where I'm going to have to start hiring external pen testing firms to test my stack. Make sure I have 365, you know, lockdown configured, that we are not falling victim to some of this stuff. We're only as smart as what we know. And, you know, there's a ton of great penetration companies out there that, you know, can bring some insights that we have never thought of, right? So I think by doing that, helping making sure my stack and my house is as secure as possible is the best way to go. Because even though we're going through compliance, you always say that compliance does not equal security.
Oh, absolutely. I think they can help each other, but security is easy in my mind. It's getting there is the tough part, right? That's, and staying there.
Yes.
Now, do you think current legislation or current government structure is able to keep up with the changes in the cyber world?
No, because I'll ask you, what, name one government program that they run successfully.
HIPAA. It is the most secure compliancy out there. That and CGIS. Neither has been breached, neither has been abused, and they are enforced like none other, literally.
Literally, like none other. Yeah, I'd rather just pay the fine.
What fine? Appeal the fine, and they never come back to re-audit you, and it gets forgotten about.
Yeah, I've heard stories about that. I really have.
I've seen it happen. I've been called in to do post-audit work, and when I give the bill, they say, no, it's too much. I circle back with them in a year. No, HHS never came back. Okay.
That is crazy. I guess they're just overworked too.
It's easier to pay the attorneys, fight the audit, and HHS moves on to something else. Maybe they don't have the resources for it.
Maybe so.
I'm willing to bet if their enforcement section was actually funded by the fines they put out and collect, there'd be a lot more fines being paid.
May actually have more secure standpoint than what we have now.
I'd like to see a single compliancy set. I'd like to see them take CMMC with its five levels and have that be the only compliancy out there. And based on your level is what you're able to touch, just like how classified information is handled. You know, you have your various levels, but it's one set.
Yeah, I've heard speculation that the NIST framework and all these other ones will go away or go to the wayside of CMMC. And I would love to see that.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think lobbyists and companies will hold out as long as possible so that they don't have to spend that money to change.
Yeah, because I mean, even the going through CMMC, those levels, you still got years to get ready, even though they're working on getting auditors ready.
I think the first audits are scheduled for late August of this year.
I thought it was in the next month.
They've started giving out your dates where they're going to start the audit.
Jeez. So they're still training the auditors, apparently.
I think that, and they're giving companies the ability to finalize their control sets and mappings to make sure.
Yeah, I mean, there is, I'm not going to lie, I mean, going through those control sets, even internally here, it's a task.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, just writing all of your freaking policies down is a nightmare. So,
wait, you're not supposed to just remember it? And when they ask for it, say, hold on, let me write it out for you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know one MSP colleague of ours, they've got, I think their CMMC documentation is over 400 pages right now. It is crazy. And they're not even done yet.
Are they a big company or are they a small company?
I think they're right around 20 team members. They do a lot of GCC high stuff and everything like that. You know, they've got one guy who's dedicated just to documentation. I think they've got like three documents all together that they use just for documentation. Like one's a question and answer. One is a policy that will link to another one. And it's just, they were showing it to me a couple weeks ago and I was just like, holy crap.
I think you're going to need to have a compliance department if you're going to be dealing with any of this stuff. If they're dealing with any compliance, I can't imagine someone can do it all for themselves.
Maybe. I mean, who's to say a guy in a shed somewhere can't go through full CMMC?
I think that's more the exception than the rule, right? Like the average pizza tech out there, what are they going to do? Add extra pepperoni every time they have to do an audit? I saw in one of the IT groups on Facebook this morning, a person posted a question. My client is going through an audit and the insurance company wants to know what kind of security policies are in place. How do I do this? My question is, how do you come up with a question like that if you are their provider?
They just seen dollar signs and took them as a client, not knowing what they were getting into.
And the client saw dollar signs and took them as a provider, or saw less dollar signs than someone else. But that's what we have to deal with in our industry. And it's not just us, it's the big guys.
I mean, most of those audits, as long as you're able to prove or show that you have adequate documentation, you know, standard operating procedures, that paperwork on anything and everything that's getting set up and a good scope of work as part of your contract is really all you need. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, but how many providers actually have that? And that's what I think also the insurance companies are banking on. They want that self-attestation thing. They want you to say, I have all this. So then when an incident comes, they ask for it. And when you don't, sorry, claim denied. Look at, what is it, Mondelez and Merck? Each are suing their insurance companies, one for $100 million, one for $275 million, because their policies, their claims were denied.
Yeah. Yeah, we've made that comment before. And as much as I hate to see that they got popped, but I am glad that somebody's standing up against the insurance companies, because, you know, I've looked at the insurance companies for a while as being a possible governing body to some degree to help enforce some sort of compliancy.
That's the blind leading the blind. They're getting popped themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, when we're seeing more and more of insurance companies and underwriters getting popped, they're not even paying. They're just like, whatever. You know, nuke and pave themselves. I'm like, so you're not paying the ransomware just to keep your client information off the dark web?
Well, they can't. If they are governed by Sarbanes-Oxley, they can't pay the ransom.
Yeah, I've never done enough research on the specific companies that I've seen to actually see if they're under any sort of governance or not, but it's a mess. And it kind of goes back to the whole beginning of the conversation. What do we do?
Nuke and pave, man. I think we need to build our own systems. And when I say we, I'm talking as a country. Build our own systems. And while we're doing that, find rights to natural resources. Take a look at labor laws to make manufacturing here available. you know, what can we actually mass produce that's more technical than a toothpick? I keep asking people that question, but what can we do at scale?
As a country, we're so divided, we can't even say what green technology is appropriate. We can't agree or disagree on whether we should be fracking or not. Pick any of these manufacturing and these resource topics, and we're so divided on what we're supposed to do. So how are we going to get any traction? And I know that's a facetious question. It's a, you know, not one I expect you to answer by any means, but it's more for people listening is, you know, what do we do? You know, when we're too busy fighting with ourselves, we're not going to get anywhere.
I'm of two minds there. I think everything we're going through as a country is making it easier for Russia and China to use propaganda against us, incite. If civil war is going to happen, it's going to be far easier for them to incite it with everything that's going on. But getting away from that piece, I think we as a country, we really need to look down inside of ourselves and really decide, where do we want to go? Do we want to be the country that appears to take the moral high ground? Or do we want to be stronger and unified? If we're not unified, we're not going to be strong. And right now, I'd say US is the common enemy for Russia and China. So I have no doubt they're collaborating. And I have no basis for that, but it would make perfect sense.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. Well, I think that'll help wrap it up for the day. What do you say, Mr. Shiva?
I think so. You want to take us out?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in for another show. We're talking about ransomware. We will talk to y'all on the next one.
Thank you. Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.